just because we get around.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show here on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you so much for joining us today on this Monday. Hope everyone's doing well, had a great weekend. On the program now, joining us by phone is Congressman Barry Moore. He represents Alabama's 2nd Congressional District, just to our east there. Congressman, how are you?
I am good, Jeff. How are you, sir?
Doing well. It's good to hear from you. Busy weekend. Pelosi, you know, COVID-19, well, so-called COVID-19 relief, but it looks like there's a lot going on here that isn't just COVID-19. I think this idea that we're going to hike the minimum wage $15 an hour, bail out some blue states, all of that wrapped up in this, it just seems like such an overreach.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that I'm hopeful that based on what the Senate parliamentarian is saying, they're going to have to take that $15 out. They're not going to be able to use it in the Reconciliation Act. So that may be a win for us. Unfortunately, everything Pelosi's package does is not a win for the American people. Certainly not a win for the Republican Party and not listening to our representation of our district. It's been basically a one-sided thing since the beginning up here.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, it's to be expected. Pelosi, the Democrats have the majority, and this is the kind of things they're going to do. But do you get the sense that over time, Congressman, you know, with just a very thin 5-vote majority, she's not going to be able to steamroll things and push them right through? I think as we look toward 2022 and the midterms, there's still a handful of moderate Democrats, certainly more than two or three, that could really sway control of the floor to Republicans in certain circumstances. It's not going to be just Katie bar the door and here comes Western European socialism.
Well, you're right. I mean, typically the first few HRs are hard left agendas, and, you know, especially with Pelosi in charge, HR 1, HR 5. What we're seeing with this COVID relief package is no different. It's only 9% of that actually is going for the relief of the disease itself. The other 91% is the Christmas wish list, but we're trying our best as Republicans, although it is a tight, tight margin for Nancy and the Democratic Party. We're trying our best to stay on message and get the word out of what these bills are really about. And so I think in a lot of ways that's the way we win. We just stay on message, let people know what's going on behind the walls and the fences here in D.C., because a lot of the time the media will cover for them. We're going to make it a point to let people know there will be some tough votes for those in swing, those plus one, plus two districts in different parts of the country where the Democrats have got to step back a minute and go, wait, you know, this could cost me my seat the next go around. So we're going to try to make sure we get them on record by calling roll call votes. We're going to make sure we stay on message and let people know what's going on here and how far left the Democratic Party has gone in D.C.
Because if these things were implemented, and this probably goes for the entire state, but certainly the 2nd Congressional District, there's going to be some amount of pain. You know, obviously the $15 hour minimum wage doesn't make it through on this, but still, you know, it's being done in the name of COVID relief and just a fraction of its actual COVID relief.
Yeah, only 9% of this package, the $1.9 trillion. And the crazy thing is we have $1 trillion left over from the prior $4 trillion. So 25% of the $4 trillion we've already allotted has not been spent. We're adding a $1.9 trillion addition to that process. And some of that money's not even going to be spent until 2024, according to the Democrats. So it's not about COVID relief. It's about a wish list that the Democrats are trying to push through under the guise of getting the economy open. And, you know, like I know, their policies rarely ever work. And honestly, you know, the American citizens, they may get their $1,400 for a family or $2,000 for a working family, depending on how it ends up. But the crazy thing is it's $17,000 for every American citizen in debt that since the COVID process started. So that's $6 trillion. That's more than the GDP of every country in the world except China and the USA. Think about that. And we're printing that money up here. And there are going to be repercussions for future generations.
Right. And that is, you know, we talk debts and deficits, and I know maybe some of it rings hollow after the last 4 years, but if you just look at what did you get for it, and you point to, well, you got a stimulus check for $1,400 or $2,000, But then you look at and you do the math, and as you say, that's $17,000 for, you know, every family. Well, what happened to the rest of it? It's just going to grow government.
Exactly. And it's actually $17,000 for every member of the family. So if you got a four-person family, your new debt is nearly $70,000 that we have to pay back. And so it is it's troubling times for our nation. And like I said, we're doing our best to play defense, and that's what we can do, and call them out on the votes. And like I said, we're getting some traction. I think the American people are waking up. So there's no doubt I think we're going to take the House in 2022, and it can't get here quick enough.
Right. Well, let's talk about 2022 real quick. While I got you here, you know, it looked pretty promising, except for Donald Trump losing at the top of the ticket. But otherwise, down ballot, everything looked like it was trending, and all we had to do was just win one of those two seats in Georgia. Well, that didn't happen. But does it still seem like there's that same amount or same level of optimism? Because, you know, when whoever's in the White House, when the party in the White House, you got a new president, in that next midterm, typically the opposition party does well. You know, the January 6th thing kind of made it a little cloudy, but do you get the sense that optimism's returning back to the GOP, the Republican side of the aisle up there at Capitol Hill?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you think about Obama lost slightly above 50 seats, I think, in his first midterm election, and Clinton lost around 60, I believe. It's a little over 60. I haven't done the math exactly, but I'll tell you this, Joe Biden is nowhere to be found up here. Everything he is doing is, I mean, if we as American people just sit back and say, what has the administration done for the American people to help them? And you can't name a single thing. Every single policy, every single executive order, everything that the Democrats are doing on the Hill are anti-American family. They're anti-American taxpayer. They're anti-American. And so the voters are going to wake up, and I think it'll be a tremendous landslide for the Republicans in the midterms. And we didn't lose a single seat down the ballot in Congress. We gained a good bit of ground. We held the 50 in the Senate. They thought we were going to lose that. We gained some governors around the country. The Republican Party is making a great comeback. Like I said, the only thing was at the top of the ballot, and that was rather an anomaly. It was really strange how that happened.
Congressman, and the speaking of that, and just spending a time in Orlando at the CPAC yearly event, you know, there was all this talk about a Republican Civil War, and everybody, you know, we're soul searching, but my takeaway is that this is still, you're still, you know, Donald Trump still seems to be an ideological or very you know, a very powerful figure from within. First part of that question, do you get the sense that there's any kind of civil war, except maybe for an isolated case or two with like a Liz Cheney or something of that sort? Certainly not the majority. But then do you also think that, you know, looking at the last 4 years of some of the wins with the Trump administration, that's still a good path forward for the GOP?
Yeah, I think it's a great path. I mean, think about it. The people love Trump's policies. Granted, not everybody loves his tweets, and there has been, there will be, and has been, and always will be, never Trumpers within the Republican Party, but his policies were working for the everyday American. And I think we saw our party grow under his leadership, where we turned out record number of voters around the country. And I think he got 11 million more votes in 2020 than he did in 16. So I think if we stay on message, we continue to implement the policies. He ran on being a Republican, but his policies were really all about our ideas of conservatism. And so they really started to work in the economy. They started to work in the American people. We got to make America great again, feeling back. That's not going anywhere in the Republican Party. Granted, there's going to be a few naysayers that may say, well, Trump, you know, he did this or he did that. But no doubt he expanded our base, our reach. And we started getting some union votes. We started getting a lot of blue collar support. And I think you'll see that continue. I think people are waking up to the left and how hard left the Democratic Party has been hijacked with just a small vocal minority. And it truly does not represent the American will.
And you ran in 2020 on a lot of these ideas, but I think, I guess the three big bullet points, if you talk about Trump or Trumpism or Trump style populism, obviously immigration and the wall and border security. I think trade is such a big deal. You know, taking a hawkish approach to China and the way they were trying to game the system is important. But also foreign policy and not being interventionist. not really getting involved in these or extricated and, you know, in these entanglements or whatever, trying to get extricated from that. You know, does that still seem to resonate? Does that still seem to be a good thing to look at, particularly for the 2nd Congressional District?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, I think it is. And whether it's, you know, Churchill said the philosophy of appeasement is feed the crocodile and hope he eats you last. And so I think Trump on foreign policy, he really knew how to message, stand strong for America and to make America great. And the negotiations, my concerns going forward are how much damage the Democrats will do between now and 2022 and these executive orders that Joe Biden, he's signing away our future in a lot of ways. And, you know, the pipeline, you think about the jobs that killed, but the long-term ramifications on foreign policy where we had negotiated with Canada and Mexico and the USMCA Act, and then we go pull the rug out from under Canada on the pipeline. Now, politically, how do we manage through that? I mean, Canada has just taken it on the chin from a new president with an ink pen, and it's going to impact our negotiations with our neighbors north and south of us. And so it's the things like that that concern me, where he's undoing a lot of what Trump did, and he does not even understand the long-term ramifications on a global economy and how that's going to impact us.
And then that seems like you were saying there earlier in the segment that you guys have got to really point this out. You got to go out of your way. The media is not going to play along with this or give you a lot of openings. That it's on you guys in the House and the Senate to really show, you know, that this is going in a bad direction. That is, you know, it isn't working. It isn't going to work for the American people.
And it's not. And that's our plan. I mean, we've been on the floor. I'll be manning the floor a couple hours a week out here just speaking up for the American people. If it's on C-SPAN Live or wherever it's at, we're going to make sure that our voice is heard in the process. Whether Nancy takes our amendments or not, they're going to hear about it publicly. And we just, the House Freedom Caucus, we made our minds up a few weeks ago to do this press conference yesterday on this. I call it, it's supposed to be called an Equality Act, but it's the Unequality Act for female competitors in sports, for churches, for doctors who have an objection moral to abortion. There were so many things in H.R. 5 that were horrible. We made a decision as House Freedom Caucus to do a press conference yesterday. We're going to continue to be vocal in our opposition to what this group of people behind this wall and fence are doing to America.
I think that's something that's refreshing to a lot of our listeners. You know, too long we're told, you lost a culture war. There's no sense in fighting about these social issues. You just need to be progressive, accepting. Don't be backwards. But, you know, a lot of that runs counter to religious beliefs, to moral beliefs, to ethics or whatever. And people, they don't want to be told just to suck it up and accept things that they find objectionable. And it sounds to me like you guys in the House Freedom Caucus recognize that, and somebody kind of speaks to that individual.
Absolutely. I mean, we're going to stand for truth. And, you know, the border wall trip, I mean, they always say, well, we're bigots or we're not compassionate. When you go out and see the disasters that the border wall not being there is causing for people coming across the border, with the drug cartel, or for the American people with the drugs being smuggled in, or these people who are basically indentured servants to the cartel back in Mexico trying to pay for passage across the border, that wall is compassionate. There needs to be a process where people can come here and do it legally and maybe not be tied up for 10 years and a bunch of money. But we don't need to be letting people cross the border illegally, cutting deals with drug cartel, to smuggle drugs in our country. The long-term ramifications, again, there is a moral high ground we can take, and we'll continue to do that.
And finally, we'll wrap it up on this. You've been very generous with your time today. Let's talk about your district at home. COVID-19. We talked about the big package that Pelosi was trying to sell as COVID relief that had a bunch of Democrat wish list items. But reality, tell us how's the progress going? What are you hearing from your constituents? Does it still seem to be going in a good direction, vaccinations and all of that, in the 2nd Congressional District, what are you hearing?
I'm hearing good things. I think we're still trying to get the vaccines out. I met with the governor this past week. We want to make sure that they're available. They can handle a certain volume. So we want to make sure we get the vaccines, get people who want the vaccine vaccinated. And, you know, I think our businesses are ready to open back up. I know we're ready to open up and to get Alabama back to normal as possible. There are people looking for help. So I think there's plenty of job opportunities out there. And I feel like we'll become, which, you know, CBO says that, that we would be recovering from this pandemic pretty quickly without all this extra spending we're doing. So I think things are coming back. We're hearing good things in the district. I'm excited to get life back to normal as quick as we can, as safe as we can.
Congressman, we're up against a break here, but we do thank you for your time, and we'll do this again real soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate you.
Thank you. That was Congressman Barry Moore, Alabama's 2nd Congressional District. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I never do what I'm supposed to do. Hardly even know my name anymore. When no one calls it out, kind of vanishes away. I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold. But I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times.